This is a Career Channel program from UC San Diego Extension. Visit us at uctv.tv/careers for videos, employment news, and trend articles to help recent college graduates and those in career transition bridge to better employment.
Hello and welcome to The Pulse, Issues in Healthcare, the podcast where healthcare leaders share their thoughts on the issues of the day. This is Leslie Bruce, your host and the Director of Healthcare Leadership and Community Outreach for UC San Diego Extension. Today, I'm delighted to welcome two guests, twin brothers actually, who are in the business of keeping people healthy by ensuring our food is safe. I have with me Charlie and Michael Kalish of Food Safety Guides. Welcome, Charlie and Michael.
Thank you for having us.
Good to be here.
Delighted. Well, we first and foremost always talk about education and experience because that's what our audience is primarily interested in. So tell us, how on earth did you get into this field? What was your journey?
Well, it actually was not a direct line into food safety. It had a lot of twists and turns, and it actually started with Michael getting into agriculture. Mike,
yeah.
You want to feel that
in
one?
College, I worked on and off for a commercial beekeeper. We had 1,500 hives, and we pollinated the almond orchards. And that taught me how much fun it could be to work in agriculture, travel, get paid to do it, and eat really well. And that got me into dairy. After that, I found dairy was a great way to get in touch with how rural economies were sustaining themselves. And it got me on the road. Actually, it got me from California. It took me to France, and then Switzerland, and then Italy. And I worked a lot in the Alps. Actually, bought a plane ticket to Europe to do three months on a farm, cows, goats, and sheep. And I missed my flight back. I ended up over there for almost 4 years.
And Switzerland, Italy.
Yeah, I got paid to do whatever I was doing.
France.
Farms fed me, so it was kind of like paying your dues, but getting rewarded to do it. And that
sounds
got me
pretty great.
Yeah.
At the same time, he was in Europe. I was in Norway. I was up there on a Fulbright scholarship studying Norwegian literature.
And
Michael was doing these amazing things in Switzerland at that time, and he invited me down. And I ended up going to France and working with Michael for 3 months in a train tunnel in the Rhone Alps in France.
A train tunnel? What was that about?
Well, so it actually, my trip, I thought it was going to end in Italy. I got into an agricultural institute to study there. Meat curing and cheese making. It was a 2-year thing. Mm-hmm. And I got in. They gave me a work visa. They gave me a student visa. And the opportunity, it was actually all free. It was sponsored by the European Union. And from there, I was offered a job to manage a train tunnel, which had been turned into a premier cheese aging facility by one of Europe's most exciting affineurs. An affineur is someone who ages cheese. And I was put in charge of this tunnel. I was there for almost a year, and that's where Charlie came to join me. So we had 60 tons of cheese, actually 35 tons when I got there. And we had to develop an inventory management system. So how are we going to handle all that inventory?
And then we had all the sweat of actually, I shouldn't say sweat, but we had to do all the hard work of turning these cheeses, some of which were 80 to 125 pounds each. And they're not built like dumbbells. I mean, they're not built to lift. They're
right.
Round and really, really
awkward,
awkward to lift.
Yeah. So we'd turn the five on. So there were racks, 10 cheeses high, and we turned the first five on starting on our knees and then on a forklift to turn the top five.
Yeah. So when I arrived, I'd drive the forklift and lift Michael up and down, and he'd turn the cheeses till he got tired, and then we'd switch.
So
it worked pretty well.
Yeah, and this is where, when I got there, I said, how do you find cheese number 65? We'd ask the person who'd been there the longest, and then we'd go look for it. Mm-hmm. And we lost a lot of time that way, and we decided that we would go online and take self-tutorials on how to use Excel.
And I was going to say, I see a spreadsheet here.
Yeah, and we developed using pivot tables and other tools. We were able to create spreadsheets that helped us understand what was happening to our inventory in real time. And that dramatically improved our performance, not just as managers, but as people on the floor. And, that's where I think we really got into project management. We got into technology. And my next job actually was in New York City, where I was doing something slightly similar. But it was more management. We had a cut-and-wrap team. There's some logistics.
What does that mean, a cut-and-wrap team?
They were cutting down cheese and packaging it and wholesaling it across the country.
Yeah, it's a way of saying cut the cheese without getting some laughs.
So, excellent.
And there, again, spreadsheets became important. Also, project management became important. Had a lot more sort of these I was responsible for communicating across different departments.
Managing people?
Managing people. In New York City, it's it gets interesting.
I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
I'm from New York, so no cracks.
Okay.
Sure. And that was when, actually, I decided that I wanted to start consulting. And so I contacted Charlie and said, hey, how about we do some consulting back at home? And we started off consulting creameries in particular. And today we consult creameries across the United States, even abroad in Australia and Canada.
Yeah, well, actually, while he was in New York, I actually traveled around France working on farms, a number of different farms, making cheese from milk with goats, cows, sheep, in the Pyrenees, near Bordeaux, in central France, getting that on-ground experience.
I can't imagine who wouldn't love this whole thing. You know,
it's hard work.
Oh, well,
awesome, but
yeah, it looks glamorous, though. You know.
Yeah. It's always a funny thing to give someone my resume. Uh-huh. You know, there's so many different things on it, but you know, working on the farm and working really rustic environments taught us. Not just a new language, but within that new language, new principles, new ways of approaching manufacturing and holding of food. And when we started consulting, the opportunities that were popping up were food safety related. Businesses to get into larger retailers, get into be able to sell to larger retailers like Whole Foods Market and Costco, needed food safety plans.
Oh.
And we were able to, you know, building on our manufacturing and warehousing experience, sort of approach this with a new style using modern tools, real-time collaboration tools, for example, and try and approach this by sort of teaching people to build their own plans. We had built so many things from scratch.
Teaching a man to fish.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it wasn't such a neat line into consulting. Mm-hmm. We originally wanted to actually come back to the San Francisco Bay Area and start our own cave aging facility where we would age cheese. But you know, the opportunities that were coming to us at that time were coming from creameries and other food businesses all around the area that really needed help developing food safety plans. And so part of what I think has made us successful professionally is our ability to identify, hey, here's an opportunity, let's give it a shot. And it didn't take much overhead. And it was just a business that just exploded.
Well, yeah, food safety we were looking at raising $2 million for a facility. It was going to be a real capital heavy business. And then we said, hey, let's try the food safety thing for a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And we bought computers, and that was really all we needed. We paid rent. We had Wi-Fi. And
you had some more education in food safety.
In Europe, that was where I received my first training at the Agricultural Institute in HACCP, Hazard Analysis Critical Control Points, as it applied both to dairy and to meat processing.
Okay.
So we started off, and also working for businesses where these principles were applied gave us some really real working knowledge. We've also been through audits. Our experience in the food industry lent itself very well to being food safety consultants.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of food safety consultants also come from, you know, maybe a program or as food science. We came very much from the industry side, understanding what kind of logistical needs were there to develop and implement a food safety plan.
Yeah, I worked for one business where I went there expecting that I was going to get to do all the cool things, and I ended up waking up at 3 a.m. so that I could clean instruments in a hot acid tank until 11 a.m., and then I was done for the day.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was very disappointed at the time that I had to do that, but, you know, in hindsight, that was the best thing I could have done because it gave me a lot of experience with sanitation and, you know, checking the concentration of chemicals and all these different things that has real value to us now, because when we go to a facility that's going to be audited and is going to be, you know, evaluated on how well they're cleaning things, I mean, we have experience with what they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
And our first opportunity.
That has to be worth gold right there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Our first opportunity.
Because you walked in the moccasins.
Exactly. Yeah. And also being business owners, we learned very quickly it's the jockey, not the horse. We wanted to go towards dairy, but really the opportunities were across all food categories. And very quickly we started working with meat and poultry, juice, seafood, and all other kinds of categories that would require these sorts of skill sets in food safety. And so, and that let us travel across the country. I mean, I've been all over now just thanks to food safety. It's been, and the more you consult, the more experience you get, the more you talk to people who have had additional experiences, and you just build up this real wealth of knowledge that you really want to share.
Mm-hmm. Well, very interesting. What I'd love to do, let's talk more about the profession here in just a little bit, but let's set some context for our listeners with regard to food safety itself. Because according to recent data from the Centers for Disease Control, about 48 million people, one in six Americans get sick, 128,000 are hospitalized, and 3,000 die each year from foodborne diseases. This is obviously a significant public health burden, both in terms of human suffering and in terms of cost to the healthcare system. Mm-hmm. So is food safety really a greater problem than it's ever been, or are we just hearing about it more?
Certainly we're hearing about it more with how fast communications can be today. Mm-hmm. We're collecting more and more data. Mm-hmm. I forget exactly where I heard this, but something like the last few years we've collected more data than all the years before it.
Yeah, and at the same time, we also have, you know, industrial agriculture that is enabling us to take huge quantities of food that we're growing and distribute it everywhere. So there's a lot more potential for also foodborne illness. Mm. But
certainly people have been getting sick for a long time.
Forever, yeah.
And actually, with those statistics, I forget the percentage, but it's a majority of the illnesses are sort of, the causes are unknown. Mm. And you can speak with restaurants and retailers and anyone else manufacturing food and ask them, have they ever had a customer complaint? Some of them will say no. Some of them will say yes, but it wasn't our fault. There's always this sort of suspicion that someone, it's because of somebody else. And so it's been very hard to pinpoint exactly what mm-hmm. the cause is. But we do know that food safety related issues are causing or costing billions of dollars to this country.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Especially by those in the business of providing that food. I mean, we've all heard about the chicken recalls, spinach contamination, Chipotle, mm-hmm. Trader Joe's, and, you know, they're all wonderful companies, you know, trying to do their best. But, you know, you just mentioned the impact on those businesses has to be in the billions.
It is, and the healthcare industry, and it's, you know, it really has the opportunity, it presents the opportunity of brand destruction. Uh-huh. I think businesses like Chipotle, for example, are having a real hard time rebranding themselves or saving their brand mm-hmm. from the effects of a foodborne illness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you're making food, let's say 200 days out of the year, you know, for 10 years, it's, you know, 2,000 days that you're manufacturing food, something's going to go wrong. Mm. Is it your fault? Maybe. I mean, those are, you know, the odds of something going wrong are, you know, they're always going to be there. Mm-hmm. So it's important that businesses understand that the risk is there and you'll never eliminate it. You just need to be prepared.
Okay.
And with
and
issues
try to
like,
minimize it for
yeah,
sure.
And those yeah. numbers that you gave are really big. And that's one reason why the government feels that it's great, all the steps that we're taking to mitigate foodborne illness. But with those kind of numbers, we can always do more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I understand. Well, so what foods are most linked to outbreaks of food poisoning? What foods should we be careful about?
Yeah, well, there are three different categories in an FDA report for levels of foodborne illness. So there's illness, hospitalization, and death. And so there are different pathogens and different vehicles or foods that are associated with each category. So for example, in the illness category, which is not as serious as illness or hospitalization or death, you see leafy greens is at the top of the list.
That also depends where you live. If you're in San Francisco and you have one bathroom for,
oh, yeah, this
you know,
is just
three
from
people,
national,
it becomes very important.
Yeah, this is from yeah. national data. This is from an FDA report.
I'm just kidding.
Leafy greens are very high because there's no kill step. You might not be cooking it. And there's been a lot of data for that. But for death, one of the top concerns there is Listeria monocytogenes, which we've been getting a lot of press in the news
sure.
Related to an outbreak associated with ice cream.
Salmonella with poultry.
Yeah, so Listeria is one of the top killers. It's in the top three, but it won't be anywhere on the list for illness because it's very rare, but the consequences are very severe. Mm. So as far as what food should I eat or not eat, there are food safety experts who will say don't eat raw shellfish or you know, don't
raw
eat
milk
or raw, you know, yeah, or right. undercooked steaks. But, you know, but I eat those things.
Also, so. we all drive vehicles. I mean, the number right. of deaths due to you know, car accidents are far higher than this.
Sure,
so my take is, do we want to stop driving? Right. I mean, I'm not going to stop eating raw oysters. I'm going to keep ordering my steaks, you know, medium rare. I'm going to enjoy a glass of raw milk if I want to, if I'm on a trip to France or Italy, for example. So, I mean, you know, you take your chances when you open that door, whether it be the refrigerator or your car, and you just got to say, hey, do I want to go there?
Yeah, and is wherever I'm buying it, do I trust that they take care of this food? I mean, you can't always tell, but there are sometimes indicators that, oh, that maybe this is a little, you know, maybe
dicey.
I should go somewhere else.
Yeah, this mayonnaise has been out a very long time, those kinds of things.
Well, here's the thing also, is those pathogens that are hurting people you can't smell them, you can't feel them, you can't taste them. So when you smell something that's gone bad, that spoilage bacteria actually is a great little indicator.
Yeah, it's the canary in the coal mine.
Yeah, in a way, but it's also very competitive. So, you know, people typically don't get injured by eating things that have spoiled. Mm. But it's the silent things, the things that you can't detect that might cause you kidney failure. Right. Other undesirable things.
So. Well, we're also hearing more about undeclared allergens. And, you know, it seems to me that everybody's allergic to something these days when they didn't used to be. But I could be wrong. So tell us about undeclared allergens and what's happening with that.
Yeah. So, I mean, everybody who has kids has that experience where it's a peanut-free classroom. These, you know, kids these days have deathly, allergies to tree nuts or peanuts. And I don't think there's a real scientific explanation right now why we're seeing that increase. I don't know if it was always that way, if we're just finding out. But facilities that are processing these major food allergens are required now to take control of potential, what they call cross-contact, where peanuts, let's say you have a machine and you're running peanuts on that machine, you would need to make sure that you are cleaning and sanitizing that machine before you run any other products that don't contain peanuts. Or you should run peanuts on one machine and only peanuts on that machine and have another machine for something else. They're finding there are actually, I think it was something like 40% of recalls recently were in a quarter in the last couple of years were just due to cross contact with allergens.
Wow.
So,
undeclared allergens.
Undeclared allergens. The issue here is that FDA announced that there are 8 major allergens. So of these 8, peanuts is one of them. If it's not on the label, it's considered a health hazard for the public. So FDA doesn't want it. So FDA will take action when they see that there's an undeclared allergen. Now, it could be a trace residue due to there being equipment that wasn't effectively clean, or it could be simply someone forgot to change the labels. And in fact, this does include walnuts, or this does include peanuts, or soy, or dairy.
Yeah, some people might not think that soy lecithin is a major food allergen, when in fact it contains soy, which is one of the major food allergens.
Right, really? And then how that lecithin is applied. Is it sprayed on a piece of equipment or is included as an ingredient? There's a lot of contention around it. But I know of one recall. It was recalled for it said it had butter, but it didn't declare milk, and milk is the allergen. And so there is some fine print here that businesses need to be aware of.
Wow.
Because that cost a pretty penny.
So we're talking about not just undeclared allergens, but mislabeling. That's another.
Yeah, so it's actually, so it's undeclared allergens is going to be an issue of misbranding. And so the code that that applies here would be under misbranding. So it's painful. You really, there are some basic things that every food processor needs to know about what their label should look like. And if you speak with food processors, you'll hear them complain. Labeling rules are very difficult to understand and follow. So,
and they just redid them, right? They just actually, the nutrition label was just redone, but the food labeling. I mean, I would imagine that
in the last 10 years, it was changed, and it's since we see a lot of recalls associated with this misbranding issue.
Yeah, there's no clear. You just do XYZ. For labeling. There's so many different conditions and so many different things that you might need to address.
Well, there's
it makes it difficult for companies to sometimes know, oh, I'm supposed to do this.
And there's a lot of pressure if you're selling like a candy bar, for example. Your label's very small. You don't have a lot of room. So
right.
With FSMA, There's a rule.
What's FSMA?
The Food Safety Modernization Act.
Okay, we're going to get to that. Good. Thank okay. you.
We're going to throw tons of acronyms out by accident.
Yeah.
So.
Great.
Oh, yeah. There are plenty of acronyms. But there is one rule that's going to require very small businesses to add certain things to their label. Of course, this is a part of an alternative. We'll talk about this later, but food safety regulation, unfortunately, can be extremely convoluted, which is why there's a real need for professionals that specialize in food safety, that mm-hmm. take the time to read the fine print and give these businesses the information they need to make informed decisions.
Great. Well, I'm one of those people that reads the labels, and I'm allergic to almonds, but if I see that it might contain traces of it, I don't worry about that. Mm-hmm. But I can see where somebody would need to, you know. I mean, a trace, I figure I'll survive that. But it is just something that it's part of the modern world that I just never saw coming.
I sat through a California training. It was California Department of Public Health Food and Drug Branch. They have trainings for businesses that process food. And one of them is allergen control. And their story is there's this young lady who was at a campfire and with her family, and she ate a s'more, but someone had used a knife that was in peanut butter, I guess, to prepare the s'more. And so I don't believe peanuts were really put on there, it was just traces. And she had 3 EpiPens applied that night, and she passed away
that
evening. So it was very quick. There are sensitivities that are very up there. So
right, hyper.
Yes, and one of the most exciting parts, I think, in food safety is where ethics and food safety intersect, because you could spend billions of dollars on food safety, but you'll be out of business. So mm-hmm. you have to really make a calculated sort of effort to when deciding how much food safety can I afford. Mm-hmm. Food safety is something that needs to be budgeted, but then you have these extreme circumstances that can arise. So mm-hmm. it's a very tough question that makes it makes it very interesting to navigate.
Yeah. I bet.
Having a third party can be really useful, because when you're trying to make a decision that can seriously impact your business, you might feel compelled to turn a blind eye to certain food safety hazards, or maybe consider them maybe less dangerous than maybe they really are. And so that, you know, having an audit or having a consultant or something like that to sort
resource,
of bring an extra a fresh pair of eyes
sure.
can be really useful.
Yeah.
It's also important for consultants to have someone to turn to. You can get really close to a client and really believe in their product, believe in their story, believe in their employees so much that you find yourself recommending little shortcuts. And if a consultant, before they make those recommendations, can turn to someone else, I highly encourage you to have a twin. You can ask them and say, hey, and so have someone to sort of create balance to give really the best advice.
Sure, sure, second opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah,
that's...
it's called motivated blindness, I think, in business ethics.
No kidding.
The idea that you're motivated to be blind and give recommendations that would benefit yourself and others.
Fascinating. Well, you mentioned FSMA, and mm-hmm. so now I know to call it that, the Food Safety Modernization Act. So tell us about that. It's the big new thing. And so to whom does it apply, and how does it protect our health?
All right. The Food Safety Modernization Act was passed in 2011 by Congress. And it was passed
2010.
It was signed into law by President Obama in 2011. And it consists, and it's 89 pages of statutes. And the FDA was tasked with converting those statutes into law.
Rules
that would apply to all the businesses. And so they did that, and they published those rules. And there are 7 final rules.
Well, there are 7 foundational rules.
7 foundational rules. There are 7 final rules right now. There may be more in the future. So of those rules, they apply to different food categories. So, for example, there's a produce safety rule that's going to apply to companies that are, you know, growing produce.
Farms. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the 7 foundational rules cover a lot of different things. And the thing they have in common is to prevent foodborne illness. What they want to do is in a large way, it's sort of shifting food safety towards documented systems. So originally, we relied on what were called the good manufacturing practices. And these were this was a set of criteria that FDA used to go into a facility and say whether or not things were sanitary.
Mm-hmm.
Or as I like to say, clean, cleanable, sanitary, and functional. Those were the 4 key terms. So whenever you go into a facility, you say, well, is everything here clean, cleanable, sanitary, and functional? If you can answer yes to all four of those things, you're likely in compliance with the GMPs. They were modernized in, I think, 86, and then they were just recently modernized with the Food Safety Modernization Act. So this really involved FDA coming to your facility, doing a review, taking some samples, and then deciding there and then whether or not you were in a working in a sanitary way. This paradigm shift in food safety in inspections is going more towards, okay, I'm going to do that. I'm going to inspect you on your good manufacturing practices, but I'm also going to look for your documented food safety plan. So how did you identify and evaluate all these hazards that might be relevant to your food and facility? And how did you plan on controlling them? And now I want to see your records for how you monitored and verified your activities that were important to ensuring a safe food. I want to see the last 2 years of those records.
Oh, my word.
And so now we're seeing not just an inspection, but we're seeing an audit.
Uh-huh.
And that is one of the biggest changes we're seeing with the Food Safety Modernization Act, is this greater amount of assurance that when FDA comes and visits and knocks on your door, that they're not just going to see a flashbulb look at your facility. They're going to see the last 2 years.
I see.
It also gave the FDA mandatory recall authority. So let's say that they go through your last 2 years of records and they find reasons to believe that there's a threat to the public health. They can have a mandatory recall of that product.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the right to your records as well.
And do they have the personnel to enforce all this?
Well, so FDA has requested a budget, and it's been slow to come to them, but they are anticipating hiring thousands of new FDA agents. So FDA operates a little differently than USDA. FDA used to actually be in the same, sort of under the USDA umbrella back at the turn of the century. They broke out and started taking, their jurisdiction expanded. But USDA inspects, generally speaking, meat, poultry, and egg products. FDA inspects everything else.
Okay.
When you are under USDA's Food Safety Inspection Service, they'll be there the day you open up. They'll actually be there before that, and they'll be there every day that you're operating.
Mm.
FDA doesn't need to be there at all. Actually, very often we see businesses not understand, oh, I need to register with FDA. They go online, they register, and they might see FDA once in the next 7 years.
Oh, my gosh.
So FDA operates on the sort of principle, we're going to come, so be prepared, as opposed to see you on Monday.
Got it.
Right.
Yeah. So looking at, you know, even if we bring it down to the 45 farmers markets that we have in San Diego, they offer fresh produce, obviously, which is in one category, as I understand it. And then they're vendors who offer granola and mm-hmm. jerky and soup and garlic paste and almond dip and whatever. So what kind of businesses are you working with? Are these the little guys that don't come under this rule? Or who's mostly targeted with this new rule?
So there are exemptions written into some of these rules for very small businesses. And very small businesses are defined by their sales. So if you're making under whatever the amount of money is that qualifies you as not a very small business, then you get to enjoy those exemptions.
Okay.
So you'll probably just have to, well, I can't really just say what you'll have to comply with because it's so convoluted and there's so many different things. But it's targeting mostly the medium-sized to larger-scale businesses.
And give us some examples of what that might be.
So there are some, like Charlie said, there are exemptions. For example, these new rules will not apply to retailers, for example. So if someone's manufacturing food and selling it directly to the customer, mm-hmm. They will not fall under this rule, under these rules. Who's being targeted are the food processors, the people who are manufacturing, processing, packing, and holding food, mm. and selling it wholesale.
Yeah,
these
so
are the businesses that are required to register with FDA, and as a result, are under these rules.
So let me give you an example. So let's say there's a company that's making that almond dip,
mm-hmm.
and they go to the farmer's market, and they sell the almond dip directly to the people who come up to their stand, and that's the only people they sell it to.
Mm-hmm.
They would not be under...
Okay.
They would not be affected by FSMA directly.
Okay.
If, though, they sell it at the farmer's market, but then they go around and they sell it to all these restaurants, and maybe they sell it to Whole Foods, and it's on their shelves, now they're wholesaling that product.
Oh.
And so now they are under the FDA's jurisdiction, and they may be affected by these rules. So if they make very little money, though, they make less than whatever the threshold is, and they will have certain exemptions.
Okay.
So, but that's the big line that we like to talk about is, are you selling directly to consumers only? So are you a retailer, or are you wholesaling product and that makes you a processor?
Gotcha. Right. Well, do you think these new rules, this paradigm shift that you mentioned, do you think that that's really going to help a lot? Is this going to reduce these number of people who get foodborne illness every year? Do you think it really has what it takes to move the dial?
It's going to be a new sort of cost of doing business for businesses. But as for the customer, I think that there is the potential for businesses to better organize themselves to be prepared to reduce the risk of foodborne illness. There is that potential coming from this regulation.
Okay.
But at bottom, I do feel these regulatory minimums are setting a minimum for industry. It might not be enough. Mm-hmm. So I gave the example earlier of a business that manufactures food 200 days out of the year for 10 years, right? So 2,000 days they're operating. There are going to be some mistakes. I think that if businesses effectively organize according to these regulations, organize themselves, there is a potential to reduce the risk of there being something going wrong. That being said, it's going to cost some money, mm-hmm. and it's going to cost some effort, and businesses are going to have to be committed to this paradigm shift.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so the change comes culturally. If we can culturally change and afford to change, this will be a good thing for the country. But it's going to take resources made available by, you know, not just the private sector, but also universities, extensions.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's going to have to help transform the food industry into something that operates more safely.
How interesting. Yeah.
There's going to be a major economic burden on medium-sized businesses for this role, because the large businesses are going to have the budgets to update their systems to, you know, comply and you know, do everything that they need to do. For businesses that just get above the threshold of a very small business, so maybe a small business or a medium-sized business, they may not have planned budgets for these sort of changes. And so it's, you know, I anticipate that some businesses are going to go under from this rule, but others might become much stronger. And so I think that one of the hopes is that the net effect of this rule and the culture change that results from it is that we're going to have fewer foodborne illnesses, and we're going to have stronger systems in place in you know, food businesses in general.
Well, let's go back then on that note to the food safety as a profession. Because I noticed there are a lot of jobs in this field, and when I went to a couple of websites like Indeed and Monster.com, I noticed that these jobs, many of them pay very well. I mean, in six figures some of the time for the right experience and education. And so what kind of training? I mean, you guys talked about your circuitous path, and I don't think, you know, everyone's going to be able to have a tunnel in France, but How could people train adequately to move into these positions to help these companies, either from within or without, like you're doing?
There's no substitute for experience. Food safety is all about putting out fires. Every day is going to be different. For me, it's one of the most exciting places to be. Certainly having a background of a BS, having a background in food science is helpful, but not absolutely needed, as in our case, for example.
Many food safety experts may disagree with that and may think that having a bachelor's in science and scientific background is really important. But I think that the industry, as far as food safety experts are concerned, could really use just more, a lot more. I mean, people are already competent, but just really competent young people who are eager to learn. I think that that's probably the most important thing above having a science.
Well, experiential learning is really important in the food safety field. But we, you know, consulting is actually a sort of a fun gig, because we've been offered a lot of jobs, a lot of opportunities to split up and go work for a single company. There are plenty of businesses looking to pay good money for a qualified quality assurance manager, for example, or director or supervisor. And it's a great way to sort of get into a company with some responsibility and then move up towards management.
You've taken additional certification in food safety, a number of different things. Yeah. You know, is that, I mean, those are...
Training is critical. So at the beginning, getting, going through trainings, learning how to apply food safety principles mm-hmm. will be the very first thing you need to do.
Okay.
That being said, the next key to unlocking these careers in food is experience. When mm-hmm. Whether you're in college or you're transitioning from one job to another, getting experience in a food processing facility or somewhere handling food will be really important to see what kind of problems come up mm-hmm. and how people troubleshoot them.
Yeah, you can really do this two ways. You can go to, you can get a food science degree and you can try to start in academia and then move into industry, or you can start in industry and then move into academia. And both are perfectly valid ways to go about it. Mm-hmm. For us, we really enjoyed going out, getting the experience, so when we go into courses, like the first thing I did when I got back from France is I took a HACCP training.
Remind us what HACCP is.
I took a food safety training in Modesto, which I'd never been to, and I had a blast. And I was able to think about all the theoretical stuff that we were talking about in terms of all the things that I was doing back in Europe. So. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
So I felt that I had a better learning curve coming in with experience, and it also made me much more marketable right off the bat when I went into consulting, because I was coming in with lots of experience.
Gotcha. Well, so what do you think the qualities are that make a good food safety director or expert? What qualities do you need? I mean, how does a person know this is for me and this isn't for me?
Well, I met somebody at a party one time, and we got to talking, and she actually was a quality assurance professional at some big company. And I was like, oh, no way. You know, I'm a food safety consultant. And I started talking to her about food safety systems. And she was like, no, I don't even want to hear about it. I hate that. I don't ever want to think about it again. She had retired. I don't ever want to think about that again. I'm done with this food safety plans. That's it. I'm done. And, you know, it sounded like I was bringing up some traumatic incident from her past. Whereas when you talk to this guy about food safety,
I talk about it all day.
He's so excited. And so I think that in food safety, correct me if I'm wrong, every day is a puzzle. Uh-huh. And you have to solve problems. And you have to think constructively. And if you don't enjoy putting out fires and you don't enjoy having to think on your feet and you know, make big decisions, then it's going to be a nightmare. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a nightmare roller coaster. But if you enjoy that, mm-hmm. it's the best job in the world. And I love the job, but I think nobody loves it more than this guy. I mean,
well,
this guy.
Every day is different.
I'm a fan of that.
If you like Sudoku, if you like puzzles, if you like, and also one of the biggest challenges is affording food safety. So having a limited budget and making things work, if you like creating things, if you like, you know, obviously, you know, management is going to want to see, you know, hey, Michael, I noticed we went through our 10th revision of our food safety plan in the last 6 months. You know, what's mm-hmm. going on? They're not going to want to see that kind of turnover and work.
Sure, sure.
But, you know, there's so many things to do and so many ways that the food safety plan can always be tightened up and made better. There's new data coming out every day that you're operating, and you can learn how to trend that to make better, more informed, data-driven decisions. And that's super exciting, just being able to see the data generated by you right there and being able to make new decisions.
And you guys developed your own software to help with this, right?
Well, we piggybacked, actually. So there are so many things going on in the technology sector that we decided to look at Office 365, the suite of Google apps available today, and create on those platforms these opportunities for businesses to develop plans together.
Nice.
But, you know, there's a great expression, you know, if this gets any more difficult, I'm going to have to ask you to stop helping. real-time collaboration presents huge obstacles. So we try and focus a lot more on project management in the beginning to teach teams how they can communicate and work together more effectively.
Yeah. Just to add on to all that, in food safety, it's... a lot of having a good food safety plan isn't just having it written down. It's about applying it, implementing that plan, and being consistent.
Living it, yeah.
Living it, being disciplined, where every day you have to, you know, hit your targets. And that takes a self-discipline. Mm-hmm. And in the food industry, we've actually ended up working with a lot of ex-military.
Military are amazing.
And when I go into a business as a consultant and I find out that the QA manager is ex-military, I'm like, yes.
Yeah,
because
it's a bonus.
They have this culture that they've taken from the military, where we're going to do it this way every day. and they get a great
consistency.
Yeah, and they get joy out of a job well done, and I think that really also helps a lot. And I've really enjoyed working with ex-military.
Well, on that happy note, I want to thank you both for being here. That was very interesting. Listeners, I want you to know that Charlie and Michael will be providing a new information session through UC San Diego Extension to help businesses learn if and how the new rule will apply to them. Then in late September, the 28th through the 30th, they're going to be leading a 2.5-day training for businesses covered by the new rule. We're very excited to be going in this direction, and it's certainly a new addition to our health portfolio, and yet it isn't about healthcare delivery. It's about health through safety. So we also have a strong safety portfolio, and this is just a wonderful addition to what we're trying to do here. So for those of you who want to learn more, go to extension.ucsd.edu and enter food safety in the search box. And again, listeners, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate you both for coming. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Delightful. Anyone who has ideas for people and topics that you're curious about, send me an email at careerchannel@ucsd.edu. Until next time, this is Leslie Bruce saying here's to your health.